E pluribus unum, out of many, one. That was one of the tenets of our founding fathers that has been such an important part of the United States of America. And yet over the past number of months, we have started to observe very much the opposite. And it has really come to light how un-one we truly are, and the prejudice that exists and the lack of unification that exists. And today I'm really pleased to have Brandon Peel on the show with us. Brandon has really worked very strongly working with companies to help to create a sense of culture and of purpose and bringing people together, believing that by doing that, it can actually move out into the surrounding areas, into our personal lives. And so this is going to be a great interview because he's going to talk really about things that he's learned and how he, just as one person, is working to help companies develop a culture of inclusiveness and oneness, and hopefully being able to share that, then moving that into the rest of the country. So please join us. I think it's going to be a great interview, and I think that it will have some good meaning for you.
At the end of the day, it's not about what you have or even what you've accomplished. It's about what you've done with those accomplishments. It's about who you've lifted up, who you've made better. It's about what you've given back. Denzel Washington. Welcome to Inspire Vision. Our sole purpose is to elevate the lives of others and to inspire you to do the same.
Hey, folks, thanks for joining us today. Dr. Doug here with Dr. Doug and Friends Inspire Vision. Grateful to have a fellow who was on the show over a year ago with me, Brandon Peel. Brandon, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me back.
Oh, it's great. You know, last time we talked, you were really focusing on purpose. You'd written a book and so forth. And you have really even moved at a higher elevation of what you're doing. I'd love for you to share with the audience how you got started with all of this and how it keeps evolving.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that question. So I would say, you know, prior to 2020, I was all about purpose. You know, I want everybody to find the purpose. I want them to activate it, bring it to work. Because when we're in that place, we're living our highest self. We're connected to what breaks our heart, what we have to give, our vision for the world. And that's the world that I assume most of us want to live in. And then last year, it was just one heartbreak after another. I was deeply affected by our political situation here in the United States. Obviously, the pandemic response, and then seeing the last 8 minutes and 46 seconds of George Floyd's life, I was just like, I can't just sit here and be about purpose when this whole kind of system feels like it's falling apart, like right in front of me. And so what opened up for me was like, wow, we have this beautiful purpose as a nation. You know, e pluribus unum, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And for most Americans, that's really not the reality. You know, you probably aware of some of these stats, but like Mayo Clinic says 97% of Americans are unhealthy. 83% of us are stressed out. 78% of us are paycheck to paycheck. 61% of us are lonely. And by the way, these numbers are all pre-pandemic. So
like, okay. Do you have the pandemic ones?
Well, they're not really out yet, but no. I'm pretty sure they're all a lot worse, unfortunately. So it really just kind of knocked me off my chair. I'm like, I got to do something. There's a fire in my house. You know, we've got African Americans getting murdered by cops. We got, you know, people hand to mouth. Like, what do I do? And so I started to look at, okay, well, where is our purpose fulfilled in the United States? You know, there are a few areas what they call opportunity zones, where no matter what you look like, who your daddy was, if you work hard, you can make it.
Right.
So it is alive, but it's just like these tiny little pockets. Almost everywhere else, it's not. So what I started to see was that the real opportunity across all of our sectors. So, you know, education, religion, business, energy, agriculture, et cetera. There's really the only place where diverse Americans come together to do anything for a sustained period of time is work. And other than that, we're completely segregated. You know, we might be at the same store at the same time, or, you know, see each other on the train, but we're not really spending time with each other. At least, you know, where I live in San Diego, there's a Filipino neighborhood, there's a Mexican neighborhood, there's Black neighborhood, there's white neighborhoods. We're diverse, but we're not integrated. E pluribus unum, right, not happening. Like, you know, we're not making unity out of our diversity, and everybody's hand to mouth. So if we can fix work, if we can make work essentially a sandbox for the American experiment, then I think it's gonna ripple out. Like, if people can go to work and know that no matter who they, what they look like, and who their daddy is, that they're welcome, that they belong, they can live their purpose at work.
You know, and I think you have a really good point. I remember when I was doing much more consulting with small businesses, one of the things that I really sat and talked about the business owner, just as a, you know, kind of a preliminary discussion, was we're going to talk about things in business. But I can guarantee you that the principles that we're going to talk about in business and the things that you're going to apply in business, you are going to find that it's going to move over and integrate into your personal life, into your family life. And when that happens, it's going to make a huge difference. So I think you hit on a really key point there, is that you're right. I mean, you know, as I think about it, where I live, not much diversity at all. And even when you get into the religious part of it, which some people would say, well, at least there's that opportunity. Not really, not really. And, you know, I want to preface something, though, because you had mentioned, you know, the killings that have occurred and so forth. You know, I think so often, and I'm certainly guilty of this, we don't really realize what some of the minorities in this country are going through. I've had the opportunity to interview a couple, and afterwards, because we're kind of careful not creating a political situation on the show, but afterwards, as we talk, oh my goodness, in one particular case, the story that was shared with me about, you know, very innocent, doing whatever he's doing, all of a sudden being pulled over, being pulled out, being beat up, being thrown in jail. Ultimately, they had no case, so he was released. But the reality is that exists. And folks that are listening, guess what? You may not think it does, but it really does. And Brandon, it seems like what you're hoping to do is to be able to create that awareness through the workplace. And it'll be interesting. I'd love to hear how you're sharing this with the idea of how are you going to move it from the workplace into the country?
Yeah. First of all, thank you for sharing that story about the person you interviewed, because that really does make it real. Because yeah, you know, we can talk about in the abstract discrimination or you know, unconscious bias and white fragility and all that kind of stuff, but I've been arrested in 6 different states, and I got off pretty much for everything because I could talk and I was apologetic and had the same, you know, skin color and same everything else. I was pulled over once with a bottle of beer between my legs, and the cop let me go. Like, this it absolutely exists. For every person of color that gets pulled out or harmed for, you know, broken taillight or air freshener, there's a white guy like me who just walked, and it did a lot worse. So, no, to your question, how does this ripple out, right? There's some beautiful research that's just came out in the last couple of years, and the gentleman, Damon Santola, published this book in January called Change, and it's about how behavior changes at scale. And basically, what you need to have happen is 1/4 of a particular population to adopt a new belief or behavior. And to do that, it actually, you can't just tell people to do it. Like, you know, all right, Doug, don't be racist. Brandon, don't be a sexist. Like, what does that actually do when I hear somebody telling me not to do something I've been doing my whole life? Right? Nothing. Nothing shifts. So what to actually change a behavior, that's what's called like a complex contagion, meaning I have to understand that my behavior has impacts on other people and to see that people I care about are doing things differently. So they've already adopted this new behavior. So basically what we do is we focus resources and time on a percentage of a population. So if we're talking about a company, we're talking about a city or a county. And once they have the experience of seeing that new belief or behavior is an expression of who they are, of their purpose, then basically that contagion is strong enough to defend itself against folks who don't care about it. And it's literally just a matter of time after that. It's like dominoes. After you get that first quarter, the belief or behavior changes, much as we saw with support for marijuana legalization, for gay marriage. Like once a certain percentage of the population believes it and feels it, knows it to be true, the rest fall like dominoes eventually.
And it's not necessarily that minority. It's the fact that there are those that really are not, don't fit within that minority, and yet they're saying to themselves, you know, it's time for a change. Is that basically what you're saying?
Yeah. And luckily, the United States has seen probably more culture change in our short life, and you know, 400 years or so, than any other nation. And it all happens the same way. A bunch of folks who see an injustice say, I don't want to have that happen anymore. And then eventually that minority who's experiencing the injustice, they all have solidarity, and change moves to a certain level. But the next level for it to actually be systemic is when allies like me and you say, you know what? Not my house. No, we're not going to treat people that way. And so we develop empathy and connection with this group who doesn't look like us or doesn't speak like us or, you know, make love like us or pray like us. We say that person has dignity and worth. They have a soul. They came here for a reason. And I certainly don't want to be part of anything, any organization, any country where that person is persecuted for that. So they're here for a reason. So that's what basically folks like you and I, that's what we're being asked to do, is to help.
You know, and you get into an interesting concept. I know that I've been focusing really strongly recently just on a personal basis and thinking about writing a book and so forth, and talking about the fact that when we look at a be, do, have type of concept, and so much of us are focused on the have, and therefore we do so that we can be, you know, and that is just totally reversed. But, you know, my thought process is, if we can be, and there's been some great, great leaders in the past who have talked about that. The one that comes to my mind is I am that I am. And, you know, do we do what we do in order to be, in order to have, or do we do what we do because we are who we are? And I think that becomes the real challenge. Is how do we help people who, quite frankly, have grown up with different imprints in their lives? And so there is a degree of prejudice, there's a degree of this, there's a degree of that. How do we help someone to literally flush all of that out and become that person who really loves his neighbor and is kind to his neighbor and understands and is willing to support? And that goes both directions too, because that has to be something that is all inclusive among all the various groups. Yeah. How does that happen?
All right. Well, perfect question. So
that's why I asked it.
So there's this really groundbreaking, talented researcher. I think he's at Cornell, a guy named Anthony Burrows. And what he established was that there is a direct linear causation between somebody's level of purpose awareness and their, the anxiety they experience around diverse environments. So this kind of brings us full circle back to purpose, right? So when somebody's purpose comes online, and there's a whole process for doing that, it's self-reflection, it's exercises, guided visualization, taking purpose-aligned action, all that. When that comes online, their center of identity, their locus, their personality, moves from their skin color, gender, sexuality, you know, age, all that, to what they really care about. The heartbreak they have, that they want to have healed for themselves and others, the vision for the world, their gifts that they want to give to contribute to that vision. And so those are all things that do not include separateness, do not include oppression. Those are just natural, normal human things. So when me as white guy, you as white guy, we come alive with that. We're like, oh yeah, I guess I don't need to be like so upset because, you know, what Black people are doing or what Hispanic people are doing. Like, I get it. Like I see that I have a purpose. They have a purpose. And there's probably a good reason why they're not living theirs right now, because they're hand to mouth, or they're being oppressed, or they're trying to break a cycle. So what we do is we activate purpose, and not just with, you know, folks like us, but with everybody. And to get people telling stories with each other. So that's what we do at Unity Lab. We activate purpose and then have them take an action that expresses what they just learned about themselves, and then sit together with three other people who are as diverse from them as possible and share what that was like. So essentially, I get to know you, you get to know me, and we get to know the other two people in our group who have completely different backgrounds, who just told us really who they really are. They're like, okay, my vision for the world is this. My deepest heartbreak is this, or my virtues are this. I took this action, and here's what happened. So it's through that proximity and understanding. There's a great theory, not theory, but really educational design principle called contact hypothesis. You put people who are different together, give them a shared task, and they're going to start to like and trust each other. And that's basically what we're doing in these small groups. So we'll take entire organization, break them up into small groups of four that are diverse, make them go through some purpose work together. They get to know who they are, and they get to know really who the people they work with are.
Well, and you're right. I mean, I think that there has to be that willingness to really, number one, share your stories. And sometimes that can be tough. But, you know, I look at culture, and this is what we're really talking about here. And as you say, you know, to me, I look at three different elements of that. And one is communication. One is clarity, you know, really clarifying what's going on. And then the other one is connection. And what happens if that's a three-way triangle, the reality is the communication has to be there for the others to actually occur in most cases. And so, you know, I think the ability to do that. So when you're going into a company and doing that, because that's really where your focus is right now, right? How do you get those who have control over all of this open enough to say, you know what, that's something that we need to do, and we're willing to do it?
Well, the good news is that the ROI, the business case, is there for it. So folks who feel like they belong and have activated their purpose, they contribute $20,000 a year in productivity more than those who aren't. They also have one. So there's a good business case you can make to HR, to CFO, et cetera. But still, nothing changes, even with a good business case, because as you know, culture change can't just happen below. The C level have to get it. So what needs to happen there is literally a moral awakening, a sense that, and this is, you know, so I'm writing a book on this subject, a sense that as a CEO, I'm responsible for the health and well-being of the people under my employ. I'm responsible for the impacts of my business on the community. I'm responsible for the livelihoods and the health of the families that depend on these incomes. Now, that moral awakening frequently comes in from communities of faith. I'm not going to lie. There's folks who are like, yeah, this is my chance to play good Christian leader here, good Jewish leader. Islamic leader. But what I think is actually true is that most CEOs have a profound devotion to the promise and the principles of our nation. Like they really get the like life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, e pluribus unum. It stirs some piece of their heart. So once they have that piece stirred, whether it's through my sharing or me asking them questions, they say, you know what? I got $100,000 I can throw at this. I want to do this. If I fail, I fail, but it's worth trying to see if we can activate the American experiment right here at our own house.
Well, and I mean, consider if that were to broaden throughout the country. And, you know, I get into some real interesting discussions with my younger daughter because she's very much on a different side than I am relative to, well, not really side, but we look at things a little bit differently. But one of the things that we've talked about and I've brought up so many times is, you know, we're trying as a country to make an effort to really reach out to all people. Now, is the way that we're doing it necessarily the right way? Hard to say. But just imagine, as you say, just imagine if all of those that have and truly have had that type of heart were those type of individuals that said, what can I do to help others? All of a sudden, there wouldn't be all of this stuff about we got to tax the rich and so on and so forth, because we as a country would come together and literally do what we need to do in order to help those around us. And I think if people were to see that, then hopefully the resentment and the anger that so much exists could start to melt away. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I share that vision. I mean, I'm actually my happiest when I'm just helping. I just love helping everybody. I think it's true for everybody. Like if you got something you can do that's going to make a difference, you want to do it. Now, the United States is unique because it is the only multicultural society that says it is going to come together. No other country has a purpose like ours, and no other country has, you know, it even has a chance to fail at it. Like we have a multicultural society and a vision of unity.
Okay. Well, and as you bring that up, though, there are definitely countries out there that are having a number of different groups moving into their country. So it's not that they're not a multi, you know, cultural, you right. know, country, but I guess what you're saying is here in the United States, there's a greater purpose around that. And share with the audience where you come up with that idea.
Yeah. So, I mean, for us, it's Genesis, right? It's mana. Like we were founded by immigrants and, you know, we also had to exterminate and eliminate the folks who are already here. So we have this, we have these wounds too to deal with, which are also part
yes.
of our, slavery and native genocide. But our founding documents speak to something that no other country really has had to speak to. Like if you come here, you should be able to have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and we will achieve unity in our diversity. So the way that the United States has historically come together, because we're not really a unified nation. We are the
No.
United States of America, and very few of us even have a strong relationship to our state, unless you live in the South. We're like, yeah, state, schmate, whatever. I don't know many North Dakota. North Dakota!
or get me out of here.
but the only times we have come together is in crisis. We came together to help each other during the Depression and rebuild the country in the New Deal. We came together to defeat Hitler. We developed an American identity around the space race. We, you know, because Russia was kicking our tail, right?
Right.
And we currently don't have an external threat. And that could change any minute with China or Russia or Iran. But what we do have is essentially an internal population that is hand to mouth. And, you know, outside of a few folks who look like me and you that live near cities, almost everybody is like, I'm barely holding on. I personally think this is our next kind of threat. It's we will literally destroy ourselves and the country, much like we did with the first Civil War, if we don't find some kind of common cause. And it's my judgment that there's only so much the federal government can do around leadership and programs and investment. The rest of it has to come from us. And that's why I think like the role that organizations, whether you've got, you know, 20 people or, you know, 200,000 people, the role that we have to effectuate our purpose is unprecedented. And I feel like if we fail, we're not going to like the outcome. It's because we've got bigger guns than we had in 1863 or two or whatever it was. Like it's going to be ugly.
You know, I think about the population here in Utah, and it's, as you mentioned before, you know, as immigrants come in, they tend to gather together because that's the culture that they're comfortable with. That's where they live. Many cases, they don't even learn English because they're within a situation where they don't have to do that for the most part. And many of them are not in a large company. Many of them don't work in that type of thing. Many of them are just, you know, doing the best they can to make a living for themselves, for their family, and oftentimes sending money back to their country of origination, to their family there. How do we reach them also? Because I think it has to be really a two-way thing here. We have got to be able to do that. I think you're right that doing it in companies has to do that. But how do we take this diversity, which is comfortable? I mean, you look at the greatest fears, you know, the greatest fear of staying diverse versus integrated. And how do we help people to say, okay, you know what? I'm willing to really go in and see if I can help and see if I can really understand, become some type of part of that community. At the same time, the community saying, you know what, we not only welcome you, but we would like to come and be a part of your community also and really understand. That's not easy to do. How do you recommend it's done, Brandon?
That's a great question. And I'm probably a little bit out of my depth on that one. I've spent most of my time with organizations. I will share, though, that a lot of the clients that I have got to work with have a lot of blue-collar employees, roofing companies. And these folks, they get that a good roofer, if they're developed, if they know how to like lead inclusively, they know how to speak to folks across language and gender and sexuality lines, that they're going to make good foremen at some point. You know, same thing with folks who work at car wash, are going to make good managers if they right. develop themselves. And so I think there's still a big room there. So if you take some of these employers that have a ton of first generation folks like Walmart, Amazon, you can make a big difference there. Now, what do we do about the first generation or the immigrant American experience? Like when folks who first come here and they're literally just trying to get resources to send back because they are also hand to mouth, right? Where they come from, there's just bigger hands here, you know?
Right, exactly.
I don't know. I would like to think that with our English as foreign language programs in our public schools, that would, you know, help at least with the language piece, and that way they can converse with the rest of us here. But I think, you know, frankly, I don't think there's a as much of a resistance to connecting from immigrants towards folks who are born here as there is the other way. I think the more we get curious, the more we learn their language, the more we appreciate their culture, the more they're going to open up to us, because you know they don't know us. We're just different people. But like for many folks in the United States, immigrants represent a threat. But that's really who we are, what we've always been. It's a nation of immigrants. So I don't know. What are
you know? You know what's interesting about that? In 2019, I had a friend over in Vietnam that I had met here, and he was American. And I went over to visit him, his wife, his new wife, his family. And I literally spent close to 3 months over there, three different times. So it wasn't all at one time. And here's what struck me. I am part of their family now. I mean, when I first went over there, and they gave me a room. They had a very small, you know, comfortable place, but very meager. And here's your room, Doug. And of course, we're talking for the most part using Google Translate. And so, you know, I'm there for a week or so. And then I'm thinking, wait a minute, there's two children and the parents. And the one child is married to my friend. So they've got their room. The parents have their room. Where's the boy sleeping? Where's brother sleeping? And so I asked my friend, and he goes, oh, he's sleeping with the parents. I said, was this his room? He goes, yeah, but they wanted you to be comfortable. And what I've found as I've read and as I've studied, for the most part, and this is generalization, but they became immediate friends. And yeah, do they have their own personalities and challenges? Absolutely. But from a standpoint of connection, it was just amazing. And quite frankly, I think we have a lot to learn from our neighbors. Totally. Relative to culture, to kindness, to connection, to friendship, because they literally, once they're a friend, they are a friend for life. And somewhere along the line here in the United States, we've kind of lost that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think everybody, every American feels that. Every person knows that, like, at least I, you know, me growing up in the Midwest, like I remember corn festivals. I remember doors being open and I don't know if many people have that experience anymore.
No, I look on Facebook and I've got so many friends. And then I look and it's like, I maybe know 10% yeah. of those people that are, quote, friends on Facebook. Because if I'm at a networking meeting, boom, everybody friends everybody, even though there's no interaction at all. Now, you've done something really interesting. I picked this up on your website. You've got kind of an example of the old way, the new way. And with the statement, it's time for a new way. And you actually have four different areas of that. I'd love for you to share with the audience what that is and what the old way has been and what you believe the new way must be.
Yeah. God, this is like really going into my heartbreak, because the old way is just, I should say it's a current way. That's what most organizations, most.
Okay. So we'll call it the current way.
Way. But basically, you know, modern organization culture was patterned after the military, where you are there to perform a task, to learn a skill, perform that skill. And the way that how that shows up in learning and development is that you go sit in a classroom, you're, you know, consuming information, maybe you're doing an exercise around it, maybe you're sharing with somebody, but for the most part, you're just being tested on information. The same way it was in school, right? And I would say over the last like 30, 40 years, we've also put a lot of money and attention on executives and high potential leaders, you know, giving them coaches and sending them to training programs. But then everybody else gets some like cruddy, you know, compliance training or LinkedIn learning or something like that. Mm-hmm. There's no engagement. There's no behavior change. There's no socialization. And so what I'm advocating, and what, you know, not just me, but the other folks I've worked with in this space, is that learning needs to be much more social, needs to be transformative, like where we're telling the stories of our lives, where we awaken our purpose together, where we're taking new actions, holding each other accountable, and then talking about how it felt to take that risk, to take that new purpose-aligned action. And it's much more egalitarian, I would say, fundamentally more American, whereas the old way kind of feels more like a monarchy. Like there's divine ordained trainers and coaches who come down and give you the thing, whereas this is saying like we all have the wisdom within us if we just share. So from a learning perspective, that's kind of the dichotomy between the current way and the new way. Now, there are three other areas, wellness, diversity, equity, inclusion, and culture, that also are done very poorly. Culture, for example, is almost never intentionally cultivated. It's just like laissez-faire, like let the chips fall where they may. And what ends up happening is, Doug, people like me and you, we develop relationships because, you know, we watch the same sports, or we, you know, play the same sports, or we read the same paper, or we, our kids are in Cub Scouts together, or something like that. And then folks who don't look like us also develop connections. And there's not that kind of integrated, inclusive culture around a shared mission. It's just every kind for themselves, you know. And I would say the new way is intentionally making sure that these diverse connections, you know, just like you had in Vietnam, occur, where you're spending time with folks just an hour a week, every other week for a few weeks, and you get to really know people. And you know, what we've seen in our studies is that somewhere between the first and the third session, that's when people are like, oh my gosh, this group is the best thing I've ever done. Like mm-hmm. connections form like so quickly. I thought it would take many more sessions, but it's really between either one, two or three sessions of a five session program. Now, the other piece around diversity, equity, inclusion. Now, there is this Harvard Business Review study that came out in 2016 that looked at 800 different organizations that tried to create more equity through hiring programs, you know, reaching out to historically black colleges, hiring quotas, compliance trainings, discrimination trainings. And the study revealed that the effects were neutral to negative, that all that time, all that money,
really,
it actually created negative outcomes. So people who experienced these programs were like, you know what, screw this, I'm not going to do that. Like, I'm going to keep promoting people who I like and trust, and those people just happen to look like me. So the new way actually completely disrupts diversity, equity, inclusion. It says that we have to bake diversity into the learning itself and not have it be about shaming people for, you know, specifically the dominant class, you know, straight white men, shaming people for participating in a discriminatory thing. So what we actually do is we bake the DEI initiative into the learning method itself, so that what we're talking about is actually leadership or culture or emotional intelligence. But what's happening in the learning method is empathy, is trust, is I'm seeing people who are not like me for who they really are. I'm discovering my purpose and discovering their purpose at the same time. So, and I'll also just share the last bit about wellness. Most wellness functions in organizations function kind of like procurement offices. They're like, okay, we've got this deeply sick and dysfunctional population. Let's go buy them some things so they are less sick and less dysfunctional, and they show up for more work and they're more productive. So there's things like they're buying apps and they're giving like incentives for, you know, bringing your own lunch and biking to work and meditating and, you know, checking in on social and all that kind of stuff. That's the old way. It's like carrot and stick, you know, treating grownups like they're the children. Mm-hmm. Right. Whereas this new way actually centers the experience on, we are a social pack herd animal. And what we're most missing, it's not more training, it's not, you know, more apps, it's not, you know, more ice cream socials. We're missing authentic connection with each other. And when we get that, we feel good because we feel seen and heard, we feel empathized with, we feel like we belong. So wellness, the heart of wellness is actually in the strength of the social fabric of our companies. So basically what Unity Lab does, it hits all four of those things, you know, learning and development, wellness, diversity, equity, inclusion, and culture and wellness, so that all these key people priorities get met just by bringing people together who are diverse to learn something together over time.
Now, you're writing a book about this?
Yeah. I'm writing about the method, but I'm also writing about America's purpose. So it's really a love letter to CEOs saying, congratulations, you made it. And the future of the country depends on you instilling the American promise right here at work. And here's how you do that.
Oh, good. So what do we do? What's the message? I mean, it's one thing to talk about, all right, you know, we'll come into your company and we'll start that. What do we do? What do our listeners do to begin to enhance and develop that new way, not only in business, but in our personal lives, in our personal communities, and in our communities outside of our personal communities?
So two things. First is, whatever level of purpose awareness you have right now, expand it. So do some more purpose development work, either work with a coach. I've got a number of talented colleagues at the Global Purpose Leaders. It's globalpurposeleaders.org. And become a beacon of purpose. And that essentially liberates you from these old identities, the old way. And you get to show up more of who you are all the time. And that also gives other people permission to be themselves. So there's a personal transformation aspect here. The second place that is available to everybody is on your street, in your neighborhood. No matter how undiverse it is, there's something that's diverse about everybody. Get to know what that is. They could have overcome something hard as a kid. They might have a religion you didn't even know that they were a practitioner of. Get to understand what people are really about and what their life stories are, and celebrate that diversity. That's, you do those two things, you're going to be more American than 99% of Americans.
Well, good point. You know, it's not easy. It's not easy, but I think you've hit on the good point that we need to be able to really discover purpose. And one of the things I wanted to mention on that, because you've mentioned purpose a lot, I think a lot of people really struggle with figuring out what their purpose is. And I know that as I've looked at that and worked on, you know, transformational type of things for myself as well as for others, one of the important exercises that one can go through, and there are different types of exercises out there to do this, but it's a values exercise. And I actually learned one that I now incorporate with, you know, some of my clients, where you really take them through a very deep dive of what are their values. When I did it for myself, I was amazed. I was just absolutely amazed at what was really most important to me. And it was because it was done in a way that I wasn't able to say, all right, this is how I should be, or this is what I should do. It just really made me be raw in order to figure that out. And I think that when people are willing to do something like that, they're going to be surprised what values are really most important to them. But as they do that, also those values are now going to give them a sense of what their purpose really is. Mm-hmm.
I got nothing to add to that. That's absolutely correct.
So the whole point is what? Let's figure out our purpose. Let's understand others' purposes. Let's start to become a community rather than a diversity. Yeah. And let's start to be who we really were intended to be. Because if we are, we're going to learn to love our neighbors and really help everyone to achieve a level that's much higher than what they're able to achieve right now.
Absolutely. And, you know, you said earlier, like, the, was it be, do, have?
Yeah.
I want to assert that just by learning to love our neighbors, so doing the being part around purpose and the doing around getting to know your neighbors, they're synergistic. They're going to.
Oh, yeah.
And the more you can get to know your neighbors and what makes them unique and what lights them up and what their real passions are and heartbreaks are, the more connected to your own soul you're going to be. And it's going to open the doorway for you to have more awakening and activation around your own purpose. So it's a yes and. It's not an if then. It's like, go do both right now.
Right. Because truly, if you are and you start to do, you're going to become even more as you start to learn and understand and forgive and become non-judgmental and all those types of things. So, Brandon, another great interview. Thank you.
Thank you, Doug.
I can't wait to see what you're going to be doing next year.
I hope it's the same thing, because, well, unless, of course, America's purpose gets realized by the end of the year somehow.
Yeah. Well, and once you get that book written, I want you back on the show and talk about it.
I'll do that, Doug.
Hey, folks, thanks for listening. I know you enjoyed this, and I hope you got something out of it. It's not something that's easy to be done, but the reality is that it's worth it. And if we can make a change, then we can start to change the lives of others to a dramatic degree. So have a great day. Have a great week. Thanks for joining us. And we look forward to having you join us again soon. And Brandon, once again, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.